Welcome to this episode of Rooted Recovery Stories. I'm Patrick Custer, your host. And each and every week we bring you an interview talking to somebody about real life obstacles, overcoming everything from mental health issues, insecurities, isolation, adversity. And I've got such an interesting friend and guest today that I cannot wait to share his story and of just transformation and finding his authenticity and vulnerability in his own skin. Brian Ruby, welcome to the show.
How's it going?
Great.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So I intentionally didn't say all your accolades beforehand because I feel like that's so much of the peeling of the onion that I want to do as we dive into this that I don't want to give it away all at once.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So, current fellow Nashvillian, but that's not always been the case. I want to start just by asking you, where did your story begin?
Where did it begin? It began on a dusty baseball field in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. That's where I was born, and born and raised, lived in Pennsylvania until I was 18, and I've been on the road ever since. I've been in Nashville here for 4 years, and I love it. It's my home, and I ain't going nowhere, but started up north.
Nice. So what made you like baseball?
My dad.
Yeah?
My dad was a baseball player back in the day. We still tease him. We say back in the dark ages, dinosaur era. He's getting up there. But he was a ball player, and he's a current high school baseball coach in my hometown still. And that's kind of just how I grew up on the ball field. And he would take me to games, and we would throw a ball around on the driveway or in the backyard, just kind of classic all-American upbringing. And I would watch Major League Baseball games on TV and dream about being a baseball player, being a major leaguer. And that's how I grew up, and that was a lot of what shaped me.
Yeah. What, looking back as a kid, you know, talking about how you had such a great upbringing, what made you feel the most connected and secure?
Connected and secure. Oh man, my friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was always active, classic, just sports kid, playing whatever was in season. Throwing a football around, playing basketball in the winter. I played basketball all through high school. Playing baseball, kicking a soccer ball if we had one. You know, it was just kind of like what we did.
Yeah.
And I had a nice, tight group of friends when I was really a little kid, like in elementary school, and that's what we did.
Right.
Yeah, and so I felt secure in that. That was like my first real, like, identity. I'm an athlete. You know, this is what I love to do.
Right. And it felt real and authentic for you.
Yeah, it was. It is. It still is.
Yes.
Yeah.
There was a point, though, where you've shared with me before, and I want to get to this, where a shift started, right?
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah. So when I was maybe 13 or 14, I realized I was different than my friends. And while I refused to put a label on it for a while or pinpoint it because I didn't want to really go down that road, I now identify as out and proud member of the LGBTQ plus community. I'm a gay guy, you know, and that's kind of, I knew I was a baseball player way before I knew anything about sexuality, you know? But when you realize that and you know, I was not just a baseball player, but big country music fan, that's because baseball and country music are pretty intertwined.
Absolutely.
If you go to a baseball game, what music is playing over the loudspeakers? Yep. It's country music.
Yeah. Yep.
So that was what I did, and you look around those worlds and you don't see a whole lot of LGBTQ representation at all, really, in baseball, and a little bit more in country music, as we know our mutual friend, Ty Herndon and others, and Brooke Eden, she was on the podcast too.
Yeah.
But there's more in country music, but still in baseball, it's couple decades behind.
Sure.
So it was just tough. It was it was tough realizing I was different, but yet still having this dream. And I went from being a kid who had all these friends and was always socializing with different people and out and about and doing stuff to kind of walled myself off and isolated myself from a lot of my peers and everything, just almost as a kind of self-defense.
Absolutely. I want to get to that in just a second, but to fast forward a little bit and foreshadow, in 2021, mm-hmm. you came out as the first pro baseball player to come out of the closet as gay, right?
Yeah, there have been a few players who have come out after they have retired, but at the time when I came out,
active player,
I was the only active player to come out at the time. And luckily now, I mean, we'll talk about it more later, but there's been 7 or 8 guys who've come out since,
sure.
in college and in the pros. And I have a charity that that supports LGBTQ plus people in baseball that I founded called Proud to Be in Baseball, but we'll get to it in a minute.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cause it ties so well into the story that you were just starting it. But, you know, you mentioned the isolation and, mm-hmm. And just the loneliness and, all of the things that tie into that. I think that so many of us who are under the LGBTQ plus or marginalized in general, but the LGBTQ plus umbrella, who have similar stories of feeling isolated, you name it, all the things that come along with that. But how specifically did that play out? And what I did not play baseball, but I played a few sports. I know that it is, you know, there's like a high level of masculinity, and back even just 5-10 years ago, things were different than they are today.
Yeah.
How did that play out? And like even just the nonverbal messages you received to drive your decision making.
Yeah. Well. Nonverbal. I mean, there's nonverbal and there's verbal.
Like, sure. Let's talk about both.
Yeah. Let's just say this. As a kid growing up, I would go to baseball practice on a daily basis, and you're bombarded with homophobic language. The worst thing to be in baseball. It's always used as an insult, are some of those words that you get called if you don't play well, or if you make a bad play, or if whatever. So
like that's the number one go-to for the
languages. Yeah, so that's the number one go-to. And so I was really taught in that environment that who I am inside, something I can't change, is like literally the worst thing to be according to that culture.
Wow.
And so it's a lot of what I've had to do recently is like unlearn a lot of the stuff that I was taught growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But you just get so many messages, and what it does is it just eats away at your core. And on the outside, I was succeeding and doing really well and putting so much energy into trying to achieve my dream. But inside, I was crumbling, you know? And I mean, it was just tough. And ironically, like I turned to music. Nobody in my family did music. I didn't know any professional musicians as a kid. I didn't think of it as a career. It was more just what I did for fun. I would play my guitar. I would play a little bit of my little piano.
What sparked that for you?
I just liked it. You know, it was like a pure passion. Like I've always enjoyed like listening to the radio as a kid. I got my first little iPod. iPod Nano.
Yeah.
Where you could, that was my generation where you could load a very limited amount of songs on.
And then when it got full and you needed to add more, you had that terrible decision-making process of scrolling through and deciding
what you're
going to give up.
Yeah, right. And so, but even like for my birthday, I would get like an iTunes gift card, or like for the holidays, like for Christmas, I would get, you know, like a $15. And so you could, and songs were 99 cents. So you could stretch it, you know, you get 15 songs and those would be my songs, and that's what I would love. And you know, it was like just a pure passion and something that I enjoyed. And like So that it was almost my escape from that world that was kind of crushing to be a part of. And I wanted to be a part of it. Don't get me wrong. I wasn't forced into playing baseball. I wanted it because that was my dream. But you have to separate the culture of the sport from the physical act of playing. You know, I loved playing. I loved the feeling of practicing and improving my skills and getting to a point where I could compete on a high level and achieving success in the game. And that's way different from the stuff that your teammates are saying and the insults, and that's more culture versus like the act of doing it.
Right.
So that I recognize that now, but it was really hard to separate that when I was growing up and about like what you asked about with the verbal and nonverbal cues. Uh-huh. I mean, it was constant. I felt like I had to get really good at putting up a front. So I learned from an early age how to be an all-American macho jock, and the kind of behavior and the kind of things that I needed to say and do in order to succeed in that world. And succeeding in that world was getting a spot on whatever team, whatever tournament team, travel team, you know, that I wanted, because that was going to advance me up the levels. And so what do you have to say to do that? What do you have to do to do that? I mean, it is a masterclass in character acting.
Mm.
And so I felt like I just had to get good at that because I wanted it so bad. I wanted that dream.
Sure.
And I achieved it. I didn't make it to the major leagues. I played 5 years of pro baseball, but you know, I made it. I got to play for, I'm 28 now. I just finished up playing, and released my first bit of music about that experience playing. But, you know, I did it. I got to be a pro. I didn't make millions of dollars and didn't get to play on ESPN, you know, on Sunday night. But I felt like I was able to achieve that dream. But I sacrificed a whole part of myself for the longest time in order to do it.
You did. And I want to flush that through a little bit more before we get to what I mean, you know, you talk about, well, I didn't make it to this, I didn't make it to that, but I think there are some real takeaways from what you did do that are so purposeful. And there's this second generation of your career that's just like you're breaking out into right now, which is really exciting. And I think the timeline is nothing but perfect. So, but there was this crossover of like you toying with starting music, traveling, you know, going, playing for the different teams.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that because, you know, I know that there was, for those of us who take a while, and myself included, coming out was a process. And there are many layers and levels to it.
Mm-hmm.
Even internally, like just like agreeing with yourself that fine, I'll believe it. You know, it's a real thing. What, you know, I remember asking you about this, like the first thing is like identifying and be like, all right, this is it. It's not going away. I like guys.
Yeah.
That's it.
Right.
It's there.
Yeah.
Which
for the longest time I did not admit. You know what I mean? Even the way that I frame it now, admit like you're guilty of something. Like really, it's not like there's nothing to be ashamed of.
Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, the way that it was that I knew, you know, the environment that I grew up in was the sports environment. The LGBTQ world was not something I was exposed to.
Do you remember ever being told by someone like a direct message about homosexuality? Like,
yeah.
That caused you to come from a place of fear?
Yeah. I remember I had a baseball coach who we had a bad game. You know, we didn't play well, and I played okay, you know, but the team didn't play well, and he said, you're playing like a bunch of queers, you know, you're a bunch of faggots. on this field. No faggots belong on this baseball field. And that was, you know, when you're young and impressionable, and like your coaches are like your role models, they can sometimes be father figures, although that was not my dad. My dad was my high school coach, but this was another coach. Sure. You know, it's crushing. And, you know, I can remember, I mean, that's just one example. Mm-hmm. That stuff happened on the daily. And, I mean, it's weird when you have that happening and your soul is, like, being crushed. Mm-hmm. But you get a hit of what success tastes like. I played in this tournament in it was like an all-star tournament in high school where they take the best players from each school and each league, and they put them all in one tournament sponsored by the Philadelphia Phillies called the Carpenter Cup. And I remember when I got on that field and the winner of the tournament, or the championship game gets played at Citizens Bank Park, the home of the Philadelphia Phillies, Major League Baseball stadium. 40,000 people can sit in that stadium, you know, and we wanted to make it all the way to the championship. And this was in high school. And it's this hit of, it's like a drug.
Sure.
It's this hit of, oh my God, like I'm getting close to, I'm ahead of the pack. I'm doing it.
You know? Makes it feel worth all the, shoving down your feelings, and
the social accolades come with it, right? Like you're the jock, you're the king of the world, like, and there's scouts in the stands, you know, scouting you for college or the pros, and that's like a drug, and I got a taste of that, and I wanted more, and I've got to play baseball in 8 different countries overseas. Over the course of 5 years, and you know, it is still a huge part of me, and you know, but it's been a tough process, and all of that. You know, there's a perception of professional athletes. We were talking about this before we started, that you are making millions of dollars and playing on ESPN on Sunday nights. And sure, maybe some people are, but I was not one of those people. I'm way more of a journeyman player.
Let's talk about the structure of, because you and my producer, Aaron, were talking about this, and I'm not someone who comes from the world of sports, so I got a little bit of an education. And you know what, audience, you may know all of this already, but we're gonna talk about it for just a second. So the way baseball is structured, right? Yeah. Let's do a
bullet point. Out.
Yeah. So to kind of understand what you're talking about from like the hopes and dreams of the people that are on this level, and how does it work to get to the...
Yeah. Baseball is unique in that it is a really long process to get from the minor leagues to the major leagues. And the major leagues are glamorous, guys making millions of dollars, like I said, playing on TV with endorsement deals and everything. And for every one major leaguer, there's probably 10 minor leaguers who are riding the bus. Like I've taken overnight buses down the coast of South America to go play in exhibition games and try to get a spot on certain teams, and guys eating peanut butter and jelly like for breakfast, lunch, and dinner to try to save money and making less than minimum wage. Because baseball is I'm going to flub it, but it's sort of trust exempt, I think, or like an antitrust thing, so that they can actually legally pay us less than minimum wage, which is wild. So people think of pro athletes, and yes, there are pro athletes who are like killing it, and but for every one of those, there's a whole bunch of us under that who are just kind of struggling to get by. And
wow.
I mean, it's kind of a weird existence. Like I was here in Nashville, sleeping on my first place in Nashville. I'm sleeping on a futon. You know, I put all my stuff in the back of the truck, classic move to Nashville story, and writing songs, and it's quite similar to like playing minor league baseball. Like you're fighting for scraps. And so It's, and I was kind of always told that, like, if I, what was weird was I was out. I had come out.
Right. When, at what point was that? How old were you? What year was this?
I was about 21.
Okay.
When I came out to my friends and family.
All right.
On sort of a smaller level. But I was always told at the same time was chasing the baseball dream.
Yep.
Was told that if I ever come out publicly, if I ever post anything about it, I will never get a spot on a team again, was what I was told by people who actually wanted to help me.
Right. You know, this was people literally in the industry telling
me. Yeah, people in the industry, yeah. People who knew about me, but they thought that they were protecting me. So it was crushing, you know, to be fighting for scraps and to get occasional hits of that drug and trying to make it, you know, and still pushing this down. Finally, I just kind of decided I'm sick and tired of hiding.
Yeah.
And I got to live my life. And, you know, I've lived a double life for so long. It's exhausting. Mm-hmm. And when I came out, I got a chance to come out publicly on the cover of the sports section in USA Today. And I've always been a little bit weird about attention. It's really like I could care less about being famous. I always just have wanted to be known back when I was playing baseball as a good teammate and a guy who could help the team win. Mm. And now it's a similar thing, a guy who can walk into a writer's room and here in Nashville and help write a good song.
Yeah.
But I recognize that I needed to do that for little me,
mm-hmm.
because I would have killed to see somebody like me playing pro baseball when I was a kid,
mm-hmm.
out and proud, and I didn't have that
right
example. They say if you can see it, you can be it.
Sure.
And so that's why I came out publicly, and probably the thing that I was most surprised of was how many supportive messages I got. I was expecting a lot of negativity, and there was some, and there has continued to be some, but I would say 95% positive.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's really great. I think you kind of touched on getting back to the little Brian deep down on the inside. It was always there, the one that wanted to just feel connected to his passion that made him feel fulfilled. And I love it that early on in your story, you separated the two and saying like it's culture and then there's the sport, like yeah. There's the culture and the fact that you're able to separate the two is very like it tells me that you've done a lot of work around that. Probably at the time, it wasn't as easy to separate the two because it felt like all, I would assume it all felt so intertwined. But moving through all of that, one doesn't just adjust well. I'm curious what helped you process through and make decisions and stay in a healthy place. Because many of this, and I know this isn't part of your story, but when we talk about areas of life that pull us down, marginalize us, cause certain traumas, which you definitely identified, yeah. Right? Like those are some core messages that cause like traumatic pathways in the brain to like literally reshape yeah. how you present to the world.
Yeah.
So yeah. Talk about finding authenticity. I know that's been a rewiring for you that you've been on a path for a while of. So what were some things that have helped you through that process once you said, okay, I'm going to embrace this.
Yeah. Yeah. So you said I handled it well. Maybe it may seem like it now, but I feel like I did not handle it well at all for the longest time. I avoided, I threw myself into certain things in order to avoid other things.
Yeah.
Right. So I did not handle it well.
What do you mean?
What
did you throw yourself into?
I threw myself into, I felt like I had my answer deep down. I just refused to accept it.
Right.
And
You're talking about avoidant behaviors.
Yeah,
you avoid. Like, yeah.
You avoid. And I found every possible excuse to avoid living authentically.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, like what I ultimately did is just one day I was at my lowest. I was playing really poorly and in baseball and had lost a couple friends and had isolated myself from people. And I had a girlfriend at the time and we'd broken up and it was like, everything was going wrong. And you know, my relationships with certain family members weren't great. Mm-hmm. You know, had a lot of anger. And finally I just decided like I have avoided looking in the mirror for so long. I just need to rip the Band-Aid off and I am an all-in type person.
Yeah.
So if I am like avoiding something, I am avoiding something all in. I'm doing whatever I can to avoid something. But finally, it's like, okay, I need to start taking steps in the right direction to figure out who I am because I've avoided that and figure out who I'm going to be in the world. And if it's even possible to live a happy life. And here we are years later, like, and I'm still trying to do that, but it's a process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where would you say your peace and your happiness is now compared to when you were making that decision?
Now, I think I'm just more secure in who I am.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I'm not trying to be like anyone. You know, I'm not trying to be forced into a bubble or into a role that that society has told me that I should play. And and a lot of what I'm doing now is very creative, like here in Nashville, writing songs about what I want to sing about.
Yeah.
Just released my debut EP. It's called Diamonds
Are
Forever. You were there at the release show.
Yep.
Friday night in Nashville. And really it's almost like a second adolescence, like learning. Now I can figure out who I am.
Right.
And that's a fun, it's a daunting thing to do, but it's a fun thing. And because there's a lot of fulfillment there and it's all things that I pushed down for so long, for two decades. Mm-hmm. And now it's possible. So every day, I mean, I don't want to sugarcoat it. Like, I will still get messages from people in the baseball world that aren't great or, you know, people will say certain things but at the end of the day, I feel like I was looking for external validation for so long from other people. And what I've kind of learned is that
hold on.
Yeah.
I want to go there.
Okay.
You were looking for external validation of what?
Of what? Of just the fact that I don't know. I mean, I guess it started in sports, right?
Like
external validation that you're a good athlete, or external validation that you're whatever the rigid traditional definition of being a man is that we were taught back home, and external validation that I could be good at something because inside I felt broken, you know? So, and on the flip side now, it's just, I don't need any external validation. I could care less. I'm good with me right now,
right?
Which is like the best feeling. And I mean, it's sure, I love it when people like my songs, that's cool.
But right.
At the end of the day, I'm writing the songs that I want to write.
I think something that is so great with your story and people who've done the work is that we go from this place of brokenness and needing all the things that you were talking about. We have to reach our breaking point.
Yeah.
Before we get to a place of desperation.
Yeah.
That forces us to take a look and say, like, I don't want to live like this. I want to effing love myself.
Yeah.
I deserve that.
Yeah.
And that was clearly like the beginning of that for you was coming out.
Yeah. And I can tell you exactly when that was.
Yeah.
So it was in 2020, middle of a global pandemic. And luckily, I somehow fought my way to get a spot playing in the Guatemala Professional Winter Baseball League. And I went down to Guatemala City, knowing no one, not really speaking Spanish. I took Spanish in high school, didn't really pay attention. I wish I would have paid more attention. But was sleeping on a mattress on the floor in Guatemala City in a little house, three concrete walls and a tin roof, making $300 a month. And
$300 US dollars.
US dollars, yeah. 300, which stretches, you can stretch it a little bit down there,
right?
Because the conversion, right, and everything, but still not a lot of money. And
this was 2020.
This was in 2020, winter 2020. And I somehow pulled it off that I was able to play okay. And I thought I was going to have my first chance to play real pro baseball in the United States, which was a lifelong dream. And I was still living this completely double life. And I went back home for Christmas, and it was my first Christmas at my partner's parents' house. And at the time, you know, we had fallen in love, and I got invited, and I had never been to any significant other's parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a big life thing.
Sure.
And not even in high school. And got a chance to go there, and he's from Virginia and Richmond, kind of traditional Southern conservative area. And so we were not sure how we were going to be received.
What's going to go down?
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Somehow it actually went well. And we took this beautiful picture. It's me, him, and his mom in front of the Christmas tree. And mm-hmm. I opened up Instagram to post it. And the words of those people who were advising me came into my mind. Well, your dream's over if you ever say anything about the LGBTQ plus community, because it's just so taboo in baseball. And I didn't post it, and it was crushing. And that was, and I felt so bad, and I got so mad at myself because I felt like a coward.
Mm.
Felt like finally I'm in love, you know, it's amazing. And I can't even tell people, you know, because I'm ashamed I'm proud of who I am, but at the same time, like, there's still shame there, and there's still fear.
Yeah.
And those are strong things. And I wanted that hit of getting to be a pro athlete again, especially here in the US. And I felt like I fought for so long, and I'd go down to South America, sleeping on the mattress on the floor, like, you know, fighting and with no money. And
you were weighing out false validation.
Yeah.
Over
like love.
Over authenticity, yeah. Love.
Yeah, all the good things.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Like, and what's crazy here is I don't care if you're gay, whatever. Like, as a human, I feel like at some point, hearing this, you've got to be able to relate in a way where this has happened to you in life, where we make sacrifices with ourselves.
Yeah. You're sacrificing a part of yourself because of something that you want.
Yeah.
And for me, it was in sports and around sexuality, but it could be for anything.
Yeah.
And
so yeah, you made the choice.
Made the choice. Yeah. And haven't looked back. And
it's, well, in that moment, you didn't. Right?
No, like, no.
You didn't post, but moving forward.
I decided so it created a lot of motivation.
Right.
I trained harder than I had ever trained before in my life. I went up to, back to Pennsylvania, even though I live here, and trained with a ex-pro football player who kind of kicked my ass a little bit to get me in shape and ready to roll. And that season when I was playing well, and that's when I officially did come out publicly. And out of all of the things that I'm most proud of, it's the fact that I was able to come out and keep my job there's somewhere out there, there's a kid who could be listening today or maybe has heard one of the other interviews.
Yeah.
That's what I needed to hear as a kid. It's possible to do what you love and be who you are. And I feel like maybe I wasn't playing for the Atlanta Braves or the Philadelphia Phillies or the Texas Rangers or whatever, but I had a spot and I showed that.
Yeah.
And I got offered after that, got offered more spots in baseball and continued to play and recently just wrapped it up and
right.
on my terms. And now I'm chasing another dream, you know, and it's very similar almost because there hasn't been a ton of queer representation in country music.
No, I think something that I love is that there's just such a tight knit unit of those of you who are, and yeah, you're some of friends. My favorite people. Yeah.
right.
That are in country, out and proud.
Yeah.
And you know, thanks to Ty was the first person in country music to come out, right?
Ty was, I think the first like star,
right?
Or the first guy, Shelley Wright, came out, and she has a great book that I've never had a chance to meet her. But for me, as a guy, Ty was sort of a hero figure, Ty mm-hmm. Herndon, and getting to see that he was out, and you know, he had to fight through so much stuff,
mm-hmm.
just to be able to stand in front of that microphone and sing.
Yeah.
And when I came to Nashville, you know, I didn't know what I should do because I felt like I would go into these writers' rooms here on Music Row and we'd be writing these songs that are sort of like bro country songs.
No.
That I didn't really connect to and I had some people kind of pressuring me to release some of those as an artist myself and for me, it was like, how could I possibly do this? How could I release a song about hooking up with a girl in the back of a pickup truck when I just went to my boyfriend's parents' house for Christmas?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's similar thing with baseball. It's just somehow, you know, I pigeonholed myself into living this completely fake life. And you know, I was able to destroy that, like, and finally I feel like I'm starting to step out of what was my comfort zone, because that was my comfort zone.
Yeah.
And because that felt safe to me, and now we're taking risks and we're,
well, and that's the thing, you know, they say if it doesn't challenge you, it won't change you. Growth doesn't happen in, you know, in the areas of comfort. And so I think by you listening to that voice that said, Brian, you gotta, you know, you're at a crossroads, fork in the road, and
when you get to the fork in the road, take it.
yeah.
You. In my debut single is called Left Field,
mm-hmm.
and I was trying to figure out, because I've written hundreds of songs, and what do we got to start with? You know, I'm the guy. If you know me, you knew me as the guy who came out in baseball as the gay guy who plays baseball, but there's so many more parts of me, and. And that's just one tiny little thing. And I felt like my debut song, which was called Left Field, mm-hmm. which is the first track on my EP that just released. The chorus is, gotta be who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've spent so long avoiding, so long taking every excuse, you know, playing it safe.
Mm-hmm.
And you just gotta rip the Band-Aid off, be who you are. And I felt like that was a strong message to start out with.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Country music is three chords and the truth, right? You got to live, you got to sing about what you know.
Yep.
And so that's what I'm doing. And it's not bro country, and it's definitely not bro country. And I'm not trying to copy anybody else. I'm just kind of trying to do my thing and whatever, not really chasing popularity. You know, I feel like being here, we're in the same world. A lot of the musicians and people that we hang out with want to be influencers. They want to be the most popular person in the room. And for me, it's just, I want to write real songs, that I wish I could have heard when I was a kid in country music that could help somebody like me.
You're absolutely doing that. And I know, I mean, so talking about an EP, let's just go through, I want to hear about like what's the theme of each of your songs?
It's a journey.
We got some time. Yeah. What's the journey on that?
The whole thing's a journey. I mean, It's the story. My debut EP, Diamonds Are Forever, is the story of how I grew up. And the title track is about tossing a baseball around in the backyard with my dad. And the last track, it goes from that to left field, gotta be who you are, you know, and learning to love who you are. The final track was one that I got to sing the other night at the release show with our friend Ty Herndon. It's a duet, it's called The Standouts. And it's just a message of not being afraid to stick out from the crowd. Because for the longest time, I just wanted to blend in.
Yeah.
And I picked Ty I asked him to be my duet partner for that because I couldn't think of a better person to ask.
No, it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect.
And he showed up at the show and he surprised everybody, hopped on stage with me to sing it. And it was awesome. Yeah. I mean, that's everything that we've done musically. That was a 2-year process. I've been here for like 4 years and have really just been writing songs for other people. But this was what I wanted to say myself to start out. It's just chapter one of hopefully many chapters. And with the common purpose of doing the thing I wish I could have seen as a kid that could have helped me.
This podcast is brought to you by Promises Behavioral Health. If you or a loved one are struggling with trauma, addiction, or mental health, we are ready to answer your questions and help you take that next step. Call our admission center at 888-648-4098 or visit us online at www.promises.com. Our team is ready and waiting to answer the call for help. Well, and that leads into quite possibly one of the biggest important things so far that you've done in your life, which is your charity. It kind of pulls together everything from baseball to your music and purpose in life. And how did that come about? Let's talk about it.
Okay, so when I was a kid, I Googled gay baseball player and couldn't find anybody like me. So I've found information about players who had come out after they retired.
Hold on. You Google gay baseball player, you're probably going to find out some other.
You're going to find some other things too.
But
yeah, but in terms of more serious things, more relevant things, right, to a kid who's chasing his dream. that's funny. I didn't find anything. So I wanted to create an entity. When I came out, I was in the news. It was a little moment until the news moved on to whatever the next thing was. But I wanted to create something that could continuously help younger people like me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came out, I opened up my phone the next day and I had 6,000 notifications on my phone, which was wild for somebody who does not want attention and tried to blend in for the longest time, and to have pretty much everyone I felt like I'd ever met in my life contacting me on that day, plus a whole bunch of people who I had no idea who they were, who were messaging me on social media. And if they found my email, you know, luckily nobody found my phone number,
right?
But it was just a lot. And it was too overwhelming to process at the time. I just needed to continue playing through the rest of the season, which I did. And then I started looking through and sifting through the messages. And I realized how many were from younger people like me, little me, you know, because of course I would have messaged if I had seen a story like that of someone when I was a kid, I would have, you know, that would have changed my life. And I decided like we need to do something that can 16 million people play baseball around the world. We need to do something that can help whoever in that population is like me.
Right.
And so we started with a website. We created a website on Wix.com, proudtobeinbaseball.org.
Yeah.
That's proud to be in baseball. You got to spell it all out. And then we applied for our 501c3 to become an official nonprofit. And over the last 2 years, we launched on National Coming Out Day in October 2021. So it's been about 2 years exactly. And each year we've done about 24 events around the country, a lot of here in Tennessee. Done some stuff with Vanderbilt Athletics, with MTSU, with the Nashville Stars, with the Tennessee Pride Chamber. Got to go to Franklin Pride this year, which was an important one to show up at. and stuff around the country. And it's fulfilling for me. I did not think that I would continue in sports after coming out. I thought that was, I had to make peace with the fact that I was so done with living a double life that if I came out and it went poorly, that may be the end of me being an athlete or being involved in the sports world at all, which was my primary identity, my first identity growing up. And I made peace with that. And ironically, or kind of the best thing is that since coming out, I've now have this whole second career in sports that is way more important than anything that I could ever do on actually playing baseball. You know, way more important than getting a hit or scoring a run or hitting a home run.
1,000%
is going to these events, meeting these people, speaking in front of younger kids, going to high schools, going to colleges.
That's just it. And I think put quite simply, you know, what I see when you tell me about like the mission, passion, mission, and vision of what you're doing with that project is like you're providing hope, you're shattering stigma. That piece of providing hope is so huge.
Yeah. You need hope. You need something.
Absolutely.
You need a hero, you know, or you need to be able to know people like, and I'm not the hero. I don't want to be the hero for these kids. I want to create an environment in our sport so that somebody, the next player, can take the baton and run way farther than I ever could and play Major League Baseball and make millions of dollars and be a all-star and have a Nike endorsement deal or Under Armour somebody who young kids can idolize and watch a game on TV and see the best player who's like them.
Yeah.
You know, and know that it's possible. So a lot of what I'm doing now is just a combination of doing music, and then we do those charity events, and I'm busy, but it's all fulfilling, and it's all stuff that I want to do.
I love that. And that's such a powerful statement right there, because I feel like for so long there was you were doing things that you wanted to do, but for the wrong reasons. And now I feel like you're doing things you want to do for the right reasons.
Yeah. I've been able to fall back in love with the things that I'm passionate about.
Yeah.
It became a job for a while. And now I'm doing it for the right reasons. I'm finding fulfillment when I go back into the baseball world and we do our events and we talk to these teams, and it's fulfilling. And when I'm on stage and I'm not writing bro country songs for random singers that I meet at the bar in Midtown, you know, trying to pitch them to people, I'm writing songs for me and songs that can help people like me. It's fulfilling. And I don't care if 1,000 people see it or if 10 million people see it. Like, it's the point is the purpose. And I feel like, you know, that's something that I've talked to Ty about a lot as well, because he was an artist who was on top of the world, you know, for a hot second there.
Yep.
And then fell downward, and relearning how to fulfill that purpose. And like, you know, we talked about like little me.
Yeah.
Like that kid inside of you who was the kid watching baseball games on TV or turning on country radio and learning how to sing by mimicking the singers on country radio.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I did it. And that's what I did.
So I got to ask you, who were your, let's just say, who were your top three inspirations that
growing up?
Yeah. That you wanted to mimic. Yeah.
Yeah. I've always been a combination of like country rock.
Okay.
So, I love like Eric Church, and early.
Was he around when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, he was just breaking out.
Okay.
And Kenny Chesney, Tim McGraw, early Tim McGraw.
Sure.
That's kind of what I loved. I also loved like Aerosmith.
Yeah.
And kind of like some of the 80s arena rock.
Nice.
Queen, John Mellencamp. That's who kind of, and I don't really think of myself, I don't want to copy any of those people or mimic any of them. But those people have definitely influenced me, and since I've been in Nashville, I have dug into the songwriting side of it. Mm-hmm. And now it's funny, like being in the music world, I was talking about this the other night at the party that we were at. And like people will freak out when they see somebody who's famous, mm-hmm. you know, and if it's an artist being here in Nashville, you see somebody in Kroger and you're like, oh my God, it's so-and-so.
Right.
And I'm not that way. Like, I think probably just being in baseball and knowing a lot of like the players.
Well,
like
you're a pretty chill person in general. So I think that contributes.
Except with the writers.
Okay.
Which is a weird thing that I have. It's like, I'll see some guy who wrote some hit song in like 1992 and I'll see him at like the Kroger or like the post office or something. And I will like freak out and, you know, because I dig into the songwriting and I love it. And, try to play cool, but it's the writers who I respect.
Mm.
Yeah. It's a real passion. Sorry, we are off topic.
But. No, it's all good. Yeah, no, that I thought it was funny though. Like, so you were going down a path and I know you were about to tell the story because you were at the Schermerhorn the other night for the concert.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was wild.
Right.
Should I tell that story?
Tell it. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So somebody gave me a ticket to the symphony.
Yeah.
Which is a place that I don't hang out at.
Right.
You know, I'm usually at the bar listening to country music, but the symphony is like pretty fancy.
Yeah.
And so I go there and
which is also Schermerhorn, for those of you who don't know the geography of downtown Nashville, it's a beautiful, very fancy place, but it's also just right next to Broadway. Right next to all the tourism and what have you. So it's in the thick of it.
Yeah. So in the thick of it, I wear my, you know, nicest thing I got.
Yeah.
Go to the symphony. It's Trisha Yearwood. So it was a country show.
Yep.
So afterwards, you know, I'm watching the show and it's her band and all the classical musicians playing together. And I zoom in on my camera and because I was kind of in the back and I realized that her bass player was my bass player who played on my EP, Steve Mackey, and great musician. And I think he's like a finalist for the ACM Academy of Country Music Session Player of the Year this year. And I was like, holy crap, he's playing with her tonight. And so I got backstage after the show and talk about, you know, I say play cool and everything. And I realized I'm standing next to this guy who's in sweatpants and a sweatshirt and who had a hat brim pulled really low. And he said to my friend, he said, your left shoelace is untied. And I looked at my friend's shoelace and I looked up at the guy and it was Garth Brooks. and you know, I was just like, we got to play cool. You know, hey man, nice to see you. All right. Bye.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but the dream is you got to play cool because same thing in baseball. Like if you're trying to be a pro athlete, like, and you meet one of those guys who's a major leaguer and I had a chance to go to batting practice with Aaron Judge when I was in college, and Aaron Judge is, you know, captain of the New York Yankees now. One of, if not the best baseball player in the world.
Oh, wow.
Top five at least. And you know, so he's like Garth Brooks of baseball.
Yeah.
And, you just gotta play cool. You know, if you want to belong in those places and if you want to play with those guys, like you just kind of, you know, one day we're going to meet each other again and he's hopefully, you know, I will have a song that I can pitch to him at that point that I feel like is appropriate for him. And you know, if he, what I really want to do is earn those types of people respect as a musician and as a songwriter.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think you're well on your way. Maybe wear shoes with shoelaces and
that wasn't me. It was my friend. Or maybe you could untie both of them.
That's what I'm saying. Oh, wear shoes and shoelaces and I leave one untied.
So, oh, yeah. So he can, so you can strike up a conversation with Garth Brooks.
Get from there. Oh, yeah. Thanks.
He was paying attention though.
Right.
He was on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Garth, if you're listening, we got one for you right here.
Yeah. I'm sure he would be a good person to have on the podcast.
He's actually coming next week. No, just kidding. he'd be great. He talk about a great storyteller.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I think that's one of the things that's made him so successful. I mean, he can carry melody pretty good too.
Yeah. Yeah. I can.
So
yeah, I as someone who's newer in Nashville, you know, I still feel like inside, like the kid who was listening to country radio in the car growing up on the way to the baseball field.
Yeah.
And the fact that I get to now know these people like Ty Herndon, get to sing with him, get to interact with writers and be a part of it is like the coolest thing for me. And
it is.
And all I want to, sorry, I just hit the mic. I'm getting passionate.
Yeah, I love it.
All I want to do is show that somebody like me can be out and proud.
Yeah.
And just like in baseball, to have a spot on the team, be a contributing member who's doing good stuff for the team, for music now, you know, for country music, who's writing meaningful things that can connect to people. And it's just the beginning, and I hope that this is a lifelong thing. You know, I don't have any aspirations of going anywhere. This is where I want to be.
Absolutely. Yeah,
this is my home now in Nashville, and I'm still fighting through, you know, trying to shed those layers like we were talking about before. Of
it's a process. I think it's definitely a process.
Yeah. It's a lifelong process. Mm-hmm. Of, you know, when you grow up in that environment and you're taught to be one thing, it's continuously learning to love yourself and appreciate, you know, getting a second chance. Yeah.
I think that second chance is so important for so many of us. I mean, like, not everybody gets it, but sometimes we have to give it to ourselves.
Yeah. And you owe it to yourself.
Yep.
You know, you owe it to yourself. I used to think that I didn't deserve anything.
Mm.
I didn't deserve love. You know, I didn't deserve success in my career. But now I believe that you get out what you put in.
Right.
Right. And,
well, and you found self-worth and
yeah.
Folks, that is like, I think if there wasn't a more important, like if we were to simple, and I hate to say simplify down, your story, but like sometimes it helps to do that, is that like at the core, that's where I started. That's where you started, is this feeling of not good enough. I need to feel validated.
Yeah.
Because without whatever this is, I lack purpose. Yeah. I lack connection. What is the point?
Yeah.
And
finding that purpose.
Yeah.
Is so strong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
but you can't find it without being authentic.
Yeah, right. Or else you're living a lie.
Yep.
You can put up a front.
Yeah.
And you can get really good at putting up a front, but you know, that purpose is the reason I wake up in the morning and I have motivation. Some days are better than others, but it's really just this deep rooted sense of you know, this is the path. And like, I found my path for a long time. I was lost and all over the place, literally and metaphorically, all over the place, and taking a bus down the coast of South America.
Yeah.
You know, and with no air conditioning, stuffed in with a pack of people and and cash in my pocket. And now I'm rooted and I have a place.
You are rooted.
Good tie-in.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely. You know, and gosh, this has been so good, Brian. And I'm so grateful for your story and the fact that you've just answered the call to use your platform as something to continue developing and flushing out what your call in life is. Nashville loves you. And I think the world is starting to love you as well, your music and all that you've done. And I can't imagine how many kids out there, and like I said, the slew of messages you're just going to continue to get about the doors you opened, and actually the amount of people that you helped open their own door. Because without inspiration in what you're doing, without hearing the message that you've been sharing and what you're continuing to share, people don't realize like that door is something that I deserve to get to open for myself. Yeah. And that's what I hear when you talk about your message. So for that, I want to ask you in closing, what is the, for whoever's listening and watching that's really connected, or even for that parent, whoever you want to speak to, what's that final word of encouragement you want to leave with our listeners?
Everybody deserves love. You know, you got to love yourself before you can love somebody else. I know it's cliche. It sounds like it should be on a poster at Target, but, but it's true. And, you gotta figure out who you are and do the work to figure that out.
Yeah.
And you gotta look yourself in the mirror, and it ain't easy, and it's, you could avoid and avoid for as long as you want, but you got to look yourself in the mirror and you got to find who you are and find your purpose, and that'll create meaning. And for me, I'm lucky. I feel like I've found that, and I'm starting to figure out what that means. Mm-hmm. But to that younger kid who's listening, and I always say this because I never know, because the people who follow me and in baseball and country music, you know, it's possible. It's the 2020s now. That's possible, right. To be who you are.
Yep.
And go chase your dreams. It's possible. You're doing it. I'm doing it. We've both been through our struggles.
Yeah.
But we're trying, and it's possible. So look yourself in the mirror and go get it.
That's right. I'm going to add to that. And before we close out, remind each and every one of you that it's never too late to love yourself. Start loving yourself. And you're only ever one decision away from a completely different life. And if you need to, look yourself in the mirror and say that today. Amen. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is great.
Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by Promises Behavioral Health. If you or a loved one are struggling with trauma, addiction, or mental health, we are ready to answer your questions and help you take that next step. Call our admission center at 888-648-4098. Or visit us online at www.promises.com. Our team is ready and waiting to answer the call for help.